I'm Mehdis Lavendelosi. I'm part of the Power Apps customer success team. So we get to see a lot of the fun apps that are being created pretty much everywhere in the world. We work with customers. We see what they're doing. We learn a lot from what, you know, for all of type of users of Power Apps. So my hope in these few slides is to show some of the things that can help you as an app maker make your app a little bit easier to manage from a maintainability point of view, from even a perf point of view. So there are no real rules here. Those are just best practices. And we keep learning as we go. So the first thing I want to start with is the concept of layout and relative positioning. So often, especially at the beginning of a project, you might have still design input. You still might have designers working on your design. They don't know really what's going to look like at the end of the day. So you want to make your life a little bit easier by doing a few things. In this example, we have a layout setting variable or a global setting that we're going to use to drive some aspect of our UI. So things like padding, margins. If you do this, you will end up saving some time down the line if you have designer input coming and telling you we need to increase the padding or margins. You don't have to go to every single screen, every single control and update those parameters. The other thing that I'm going to show an example here as I'm speaking about this. So I have a simple example here of a screen showing a profile of a particular user. This could be anything. One thing that I have done on the onVisible property, which is what gets triggered when you get to this page, is define those parameters. I have margin left. I even have a team color that I can define here that can be used throughout the app. So what it allows me to do is that when I define a control like this one, or any one of them actually, so I can go and say, you know, I'm going to bind my padding to that particular variable that I set. So if I have, if I go padding margin, padding left, for example, you're going to see that it's going to be bound to this variable. Similarly, if I go to my X position, or Y position in this case, you'll see that I have here set up my margin layout and margin bottom. So those are variables that are going to be set at the beginning of your app. What it allows you to do, is quickly go and react to changes to your design. So I'm going to here just update a few parameters and see what happens if I just say I want to do a margin of 25, maybe just 25 here. So I'm exaggerating a bit the effect. Let's say I'm going to add maybe a margin of 50, 55 here. And if I update this screen, you can see here that I quickly was able to change all of the paddings and margins. This is the padding and margins between app. So it happened at once throughout all of my app. So I'm gonna go back and reset this just because I want to show more things. The other thing that's super useful to do is build your equations in such a way that your controls are relative to each other. So in this case, I am binding this Y property of the text box here to be driven by the location of the Y parameter of the control before it, which is the name text box. So at this point, my Y position is really the position of this control plus its height, so that gives me this extra space here, and plus my margin bottom and top. What this allows you to do easily is like you could quickly move your app, everything you control, it will allow you to move all of your elements at once. So it's super useful, again, especially if you are doing this within the context of a variable height gallery, having this relative positioning of elements will save you time. It will make your app a little bit more flexible in terms of growth. In terms of how it lays itself out. So again, this is just in terms of one of the tips that I usually do initially for my project. It just set up this parameter. It's going to be useful for you down the line. So one of the very frequent thing that we see in apps is the need to filter data. So I have here a simple example of a photo gallery, and I'm filtering it by my photos versus all photos, by another drop-down for my public versus private, and then maybe a search box. And I'm gonna switch to the example, to a live example in a second here, but typically this is the code you would see. In fact, let me jump to that right now. And I wanna compare both approaches because they all lead to different complexity in terms of code. The first one is what really the approach that even encouraged by the platform. And let me show the actual equation here, or the formula. And you can see it gets nested. And this is a very simple example where we've seen a lot of apps with multiple filters and search boxes. And you see the complexity. It gets a little bit hard to know how your if statements are nested to maintain and all that stuff. So a different approach, and you can come up with any approach, but usually my reaction is when I see things getting complicated, I try to see where I can kind of simplify it. One idea here is to delegate kind of the responsibility of filtering to each one of those controls. So as I am, let me first show how the actual equation here contrasts with the previous one. So remember here we had that whole formula to do all of that, filtering and drop down. In this case, we have a much simpler equation that you can easily wrap your head around. You can see that what I have really here is I'm taking my initial collection of photos, and I'm doing an intersection between a bunch of collection that I'm going to be setting up as I'm doing my filtering changes. So in this case, filtered photos, public, private filter photos, and church photos are being constructed as I'm doing my filtering. The other approach I had here was to wait until to basically react to the controls change event or change of value, which drive the results here. In this particular case, what we are doing is we are going to the onSelect of those, or onChain in this case, in the onChange event, and I'm actually filtering my equations right there. So this is a simpler equation here. It avoids a little bit compacting all of the complexity in the actual gallery items property. Instead, I'm using the on change events here, or an on select events, to drive the building of those collections. So I have three collections total. That's what you need to set up. So at each of the filtering controls, you build your filtered collections, and at the end you are left just by a simple equation that allow you to take the intersection of all of those collections. It makes it easy to remove and add additional filters, and it reduces overall complexity of your app. So again, if you find yourself in this mode, building getting in a nested equations, you might want to consider simplifying that by delegating the actual filtering to the actual controls that are filtering. So if we look at the let me look at the controls here. Again, it's just as I'm going through each one of those, I'm doing my filtering. And from a performance point of view, you won't see any difference here. But there is an overhead in this method is that I'm building additional collections. This works great when you know your collection is limited. You don't have more than 2,000 items in your gallery, let's say. But again, like from a pure performance point of view, they lead to the same result. It's just that it's easier to maintain in one situation versus the other one. So going back here, so again, different approach. I'm moving on to another thing that we see a lot again in apps. So actually this should be reversed, but what we often see is this filtering or a query back to your data source to get some object. In this particular case, I'm getting the first item from my meetings collection. I'm taking the first, and I'm getting the ID out of that. So I'm making multiple calls to the backend in order to get different properties. What you really want to do is do it once at the top here. You want to do a lookup. Let me fix this real quick, because there is a tiny bit of a it shouldn't have been there. You can take a picture now. But basically what you're doing here is I'm taking a lookup of the first item, and then I'm reusing that cached variable throughout my code. So it's another pattern we tend to see is that people are tend to go and fetch data each time they need it from a data source directly, and often you don't need to do that. Often it's best to kind of cache it and then use it locally. So just an example, and I mentioned this again, first and filter is always always an equivalent to a lookup, so you might as well use that and then get that data into a single object that then you reuse to get the properties of that object. So it's pretty straightforward, but often those are details that can be overlooked, but has a real impact on how easily you can read the code, but also performance in some situations. I had that in my perf talk, same ideas, try to encapsulate data into their own variable and then use them in your equations. So here's another example where, and I'm simplifying the example, but what we see sometimes is a lot more complex and it goes deeper into branches. But just to kind of keep it clear, I want to show here an example where we have a specific requirement, and I'm going to show an app that drives this requirement real quick here. So I have a feed news app which has buttons that might lead you to a different screen. It might lead you to an actual API call on your back end. So let's say you have a connector that approves, reject vacation. It might lead you to another app externally. So three scenarios. You might deep link into a screen within your app. You might have to call the other scenario is you might have to call an external API, or launch an external app altogether. So those are the three scenarios. I'm going to go over them again. So typically, given the number of possibilities, and in this particular case, we might have up to three different detail screens. Those are actual screens in your Power Apps. You have time, detail screen, time away, kudos. They're all going to be called if the argument calls for it, but also if the name of the property is navigate. Same thing with deep link. If our feed here that drives this data had information that is leading me to launch an app, I would see as a keyword a deep link here. And just to kind of have an idea about what I'm talking about here, I'm binding my my gallery to a card collection, and within my gallery I have yet another collection here, which is basically a lookup to a different table, an action table that kind of drives what is my card going to be doing. Like, am I going to link to an external API? Am I going to go to another screen within my app? So basically, we're compacting, we're driving the logic of navigation from within our data. So our data is really what dictates what our app is going to be doing. So there is a lot of branching there. And the way to avoid it is to do a few things. You could, first of all, use switch because it ends up being a cleaner thing. The other thing that I'm doing here is instead of using an if statement to look up my argument, I'm using a lookup to a different table that I've constructed. So I'm gonna go to the next screen here. And what I've done in order to reduce complexity for that, you know, there was three if statement that I'm reducing down to just really this navigate. And what I'm doing here is I'm actually constructing my name, basically a value pair that links a name to an actual screen. So the end result of that is that I don't have to do an if switch, an if statement. I only have to do a lookup, and the argument that's coming from the data is going to drive which one of the column or the rows are going to get back from my screen collection. And then the end result again is a much more compact. As you can see down here, is a much more compact line navigate lookup, as you can see there. So there are many ways you could reduce complexity in your app. This is one of them. I have another example there. I'm driving the style of those buttons here. As you can see, I have a different style. Let me get out of here, sorry. As you can see, my buttons can either be, this is the actual same collection again, and my button can either be a hyperlink, read more, it could be in green and red. So those are all colors that's gonna be, styles that's gonna be applied to my buttons depending on the data that's contained in each one of the cards. So each card is associated to action, and each action tells me not only what to do, but also what the style I should use for my control. So what I'm doing here is I'm also preparing a collection of styles that I'm going to use throughout my app. And instead of going to if my action style is button style or cancel style or hyperlink, instead of using an if statement, I'm doing a lookup to the style. I'm fetching the fill property that I have defined there. And then I'm doing a color value to convert the hex to that to an actual RGBA color. The end result here, the style themselves can be your organization style. They can be encapsulated into their own collection coming from a SQL table or database or CDS or Excel or what have you. But the bottom line is that by doing certain things like that, especially when you see yourself doing if statements, you might want to consider using a collection to kind of and a lookup mechanism to reduce that nesting of if statements. It gets hard in Power Apps. I don't know if you have experience. We don't really necessarily have intent. We don't style like I mean the. You can see easily how as you're adding more formulas, you don't have the kind of the. The capability you would have in Visual Studio in formatting your styles or intent or like even like recently we have color coding, but again, without going off topic, if you find yourself doing a lot of complex formulas within your Power Apps, that's probably something you have to question because it's not even designed necessarily to have super complex, long 2 pages. Code. It was supposed to be light in that aspect, although you could do it. So, but it might be hard to maintain and have other people understand what you're doing. So the other thing that kind of alluded to with the lookup style is that you often have this situation where you have static content in your app, and that doesn't help you if you're going to do localization. You find yourself sometimes having to substitute actual data, and I can point to for example here you have like session details. So this is an email confirmation just to give you the background of a conference. So there's some HTML that you're gonna end up sending via email. It could be a report that you're generating within your app. But you need to substitute some information given user input or some actual values. So again, this leads to a really hard to maintain update code. The alternative is to get all of this stored in some Excel, or in my case here, I use CDS. And let me show an example of that real quick. So I have a data source here. That have settings, and basically what I'm doing here is I'm just taking that. Basically, what I'm doing in this particular situation is I'm substituting the index here. You can see here that I have some markers 0, 1, similar to what you would have in C#, and I'm substituting that in Power Apps so that I actually get my data from my actual user, full name, for example, email. I'm substituting that into my template, and that way I can isolate between the actual template that I have and the data that I want to substitute to. So this is a very common thing you would do in C# on all those languages, but the net result is that you will have an external source for your data, and you make it easy for you to modify your HTML in an HTML editor. So external static data is something that, and finally, it's something that you might want to consider for your data. And finally, I have the last example here. We see often people create two screens, one for add, one for edit. Or sometimes the best case scenario to do a patch with an if statement, whether it's a new item or an update. We want to update a current item. The alternative is to set your update context variable here, customer issue, as an example, either to a default object or to the object that you are trying to edit in here. So you configure that. When it's time to actually do a save, you only need to pass in that variable. So what you end up having to only build one screen for this, and your patch is what changes, and you do most of the work for the logic to whether you want to be on a new edit, you want to edit a new item or update an old item, happens at this layer. And it depends on the user intention, whether it's an edit or whether it's a new. So again, if you find yourself building two screens to just do edit and add in, there is an easy way to just combine that. And I think I'm out of time. I have one more slide, but that's probably an easy one to cover. So I have a passing context variable. I tend to do it from within the navigate. It makes it easy to reuse the detail screen to use. Basically, if you have a deep linking scenario, let's say you have a push notification that's going to get you to a screen, you don't have to depend on a gallery.selected value. Instead, you use this item of that gallery passed into selected item, or you update, again, the same value here, selected item, depending on what the deep link parameter was in your push notification. So passing context variable through the navigate is something I like to do personally. So, and that's it. Any questions, anything? We're done. Thank you.